Good evening, folks, and welcome back to the Trinity Tims. It's myself, Eric Knott, and of course, I'm going to be with my colleagues, Joe McHugh from Video Cells and James Horace from the Celtic blog. And it's been a fairly eventful week, to say the least. We've got a fairly packed agenda this evening. A lot of stuff to talk about between what's going on at our own club and between what's going across the city or what's going on across the city. So we have plenty to discuss and to kind of pull apart and have a good chat about. So we started the week, obviously we had the Bayern Munich game. We all know how that panned out. It was a pretty tough one to swallow, pretty tough one to absorb, but I think when we look back in it now, a lot of people are looking at it in a pretty positive light, except for one particular individual, and for quite a while now he's been getting on my goat. And that's Jason Cundy from TalkSport. Now, I understand, to be fair, like, that Jason has a job to do on TalkSport, even though it's a garbage job. Let's call it that, because that's what it is. But he's been really, really sticking the boot into Celtic this year, or this season. And to start with, I suppose we got an awful hammering after the 7-1 defeat to Borussia Dortmund, which I suppose we might have slightly deserved that. And then we got another fairly deep hammering from him about a result against Aston Villa, but he crossed the line last Tuesday night, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, he basically took the ever-living piss out of Celtic again when it wasn't deserved, was not deserved. And to be fair, Jason Cundy was taken apart by Jamie O'Hara. Even Jamie O'Hara said that it was out of line. So I have a message for Jason Cundy from me to Jason. So here goes. Has anybody seen Jason Cundy? Has anybody even seen the medal collection that Jason Cundy has? Well, let's have a look-see. Chelsea, no medals. Tottenham Hotspur, no medals. Crystal Palace, no medals. Bristol City, no medals. What about Portsmouth? No medals. Ipswich Town, any medals? No medals. Jason Cundy, loser. No name, Jason Cundy. About the only thing that Jason Cundy is famous for is falling flat in his twat and putting a goal in from 50 yards against Ipswich Town. I suppose if they gave out medals for that, he'd get one, but they don't, do they? Jason Cundy, loser.
Oh, glad I got that off my chest and we can move on now, guys.
Brother, you've been hanging on to that way too long. That was outstanding.
Yeah, well, you know, he deserves that, to be fair.
But, yeah, he fucking does.
You know, he's an audience. I mean, to be fair, guys, he's had 12 years as a professional, and he had an average of 12 appearances per season, you know. And this guy feels that he can stick the boot into Celtic all the time. You know, not good enough. So anyway, we'll move along swiftly. I'm glad I got that off my chest, and we can talk about the things that matter.
Now that you have, can I suggest an item for the end of the show?
Yeah, go on.
Chris Jack has just reported that Phil has gone. So for now, let's give him the moment of silence that he deserves. Right, let's get on.
Phil, is that a fact? Okay, so
easiest prediction I've ever made, that he would not be in the dugout for the Celtic game. But
you were pretty spot on there, James. But we Next all kind of thought it might go a bit longer. But I mean, to be fair, I had said when we discussed it after the Queen's Park game, unless results were disastrous, I said, yeah, you know. And then again, yesterday's result was disastrous. So there, you know, there was a good chance that it was. If Chris Jack is on the money, it was bound to happen. So anyway, look, we'll move along with the agenda. One of the first things we want to talk about, obviously, is the game on Tuesday evening, which was a tough one to swallow. I don't know what way to describe, from my perspective, what happened on Tuesday evening. Anyway, it was very, very tough for me. But I'm going to go with Joe first. Joe, you can talk about it. So I'll say what I have to say after you guys are finished.
It's all very mixed. It was a great performance, but we weren't too far away from doing a bit more. The way the team played, the way they kept the ball, the way they created chances was fantastic. I don't think I'll see another European away match who'll create three clear-cut chances and miss them all within the space of the 5 minutes. And that was after Callum McGregor, who's usually fantastic, ran through from the halfway line, had a 1-1, and again, in a 1-1, you'd fancy Callum McGregor to at least put it on target, but he had time to compose himself and unfortunately ballooned it over the bar. And then those three chances, the first one to Kuhn, then Engels across goal for Maeda just away from it. And then Maeda taking that first time shot when he probably had time and Neuer was out of position. So it's great to have those chances, but cold hard professional hat on and you've got to score one of them. But it was a great performance. It was everything from 18-yard box to 18-yard box. It was that's what you'd want. The team was incredibly composed. Looked a wee bit ropey early on. Bayern seemed to be targeting down the left. I think that's just force of habit for European teams against Celtic. But we got hold of it, and once we were in the game, we were well in the game. But the frustrations, it all comes back to transfer policy. Brendan Rodgers put on two substitutes in that match. One of them was Yang, and he didn't trust Yang to play against Hibs yesterday. So that's a manager that's been sold short. That's a manager that's not got enough options. The players played too long, and that maybe impacted them on the first half against Hibs. But if you're serious about European competition, you've got at least 16 Champions League-level players in your squad. Unfortunate that Bernardo was injured, but that highlighted how short we are, because there's not a not a player in the development squad, the B team, the Colts, whatever you want to call it, capable of coming in and being our next midfielder. So during the League Cup run, Luke McCowan was cup-tied. He wasn't available. That left us with four. James, stop looking at your phone.
Just confirming the news, that's all.
Now, during the League Cup run, we had four midfielders. So if you've got four midfielders and one of them's off the boil, you've got to cross your fingers and hope that the other three are on top of their game. So we're short. We should be able to put on a midfielder. Brendan Rodgers, clearly reservations about Luke McCown in the Champions League. Another irritation, Schlupp had a very good game against his former Crystal Palace colleague, Michael. Schlupp could have been signed at the start of January, or another competent fullback with Premiership experience. And you never know, that might have made a difference in the first leg. Elise had a very good game. We know, even the manager's mentioned, Greg Taylor, in the last couple of weeks, he's found out that Kieran Tierney's coming in for lots of money, and Schlupp's in just now for lots of money. If we're paying Schlupp half his Crystal Palace wages, maybe £30,000 a week, that might not be far short of Greg Taylor's monthly pay from Celtic. Hopefully he's getting good bonuses for being in the team and hopefully good bonuses for winning trophies. But it's human nature that Greg Taylor might have... there's been, compared to other guys who've been in the final year of their contract, Greg Taylor's been fantastic this season. He's barely dropped a notch. He's in a team where he's and you get told it's a little bit like Jackie McNamara. You get told that you're a leadership guy and you're somebody we can lean on, but that's not reflected in his pay packet. So that should have been something that was sorted out a long time ago. But we saw Schlupp improved our defence. So that was when it could have been bettered. And then when I think Jota came off, I think 60 minutes, and Ida came on, and then Kuhn was injured, and Yang came on at that point. So Yang shouldn't be playing the Champions League. He wouldn't be playing for any other club in the playoffs. And similarly, I doubt that any team in the Champions League playoffs only used two substitutes, because the manager, that was all he trusted beyond the 11 that was on his team sheet. So the manager has been sold short. clearly, a lot of supporters thought it as well, that as soon as we were drawing against Bayern Munich, oh well, forget it, take the money and run. But we had a fair chance against Bayern Munich. And if Schlupp had been in at the start of January, if he'd five SPFL matches under his belt, he might have played the start of the first leg. If Kyogo had been held on to, he might have come on in the second half and popped a chance away. He might not have. Schlupp might have had a nightmare in the first leg, but we'll never know. But the bottom line is, the manager was shortchanged for both legs. So we'll see if the board make it up to him or whether Michael Nicholson was watching that match in Munich, rubbing his hands and saying, we're going to get a right bundle of money from selling off players in the summer. So interesting times. It was only two matches, but two very significant matches. And we'll find out. Next time Celtic in the Champions League, it's August 2021 or 2027, 2028. So we'll find out if the team sheet's been strengthened for those matches, and we'll know an awful lot more about what direction the club's going in. So it was a heartening and frustrating performance. Everyone involved, the 13 players in the park, did fantastic. The manager got his tactics spot on, but I'm sure afterwards there's a few regrets there, but that's the Celtic way. That's my way. So, James, if you could put down your Chris Chan updates and give us your reflections from Munich rather than the ongoing circus at Ibrox.
Like you say, I mean, I didn't know what to think about it after the game. I spent a couple of hours basically just staring at space and being like, oh, man, how do I even start to talk about this? What do I feel about it? And I was really conscious that I didn't want to go and write a hard luck story because we've had too many of them. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, this isn't a hard luck story at all. We've gone to Munich and we've come within 60 seconds of getting a win in their backyard in a Champions League qualifying game, a knockout tie. So everything that we all talked about at the end of the first game, and we all sort of said to ourselves, well, you know, I mean, even the most optimistic one has said to ourselves, maybe Munich just took a foot off the gas in the last 20 minutes. Maybe it was nothing to do with us being particularly brilliant and upping their game and meeting their level. Maybe we just took a foot off the gas. Maybe they just took their foot off the gas and thought, right, 2-1's fine, we can leave with that. But it wasn't like that at all. Because for the whole game in Germany, we matched them exactly the same way as we did in the last 20 minutes of that game. If we didn't create as many chances and we weren't as aggressive and in their face, at the top end of the pitch, we met them and matched them everywhere else on the pitch. It was excellent. It was, and I thought it was a triumphant performance. And so I wasn't going to write a hard luck story. I was going to write a how fucking good were we story, which is what I eventually did write. But like yourself, mate, and I left it to the following day to write about the opportunity lost and the opportunity missed. And I couldn't help but think that, and again, it was the substitution, it was Brian on Yang that annoyed me the most. Because I couldn't help but think, if we go and sign the striker we're supposed to sign, then this whole thing looks different. Because instead of bringing on Ida, hold on a minute, I'm trying to remember what the order of the subs was, whatever it was, right? But anyway, rather than bringing on our winger, we could bring on the striker, we could rest Kuhn, we could rest Maeda, whatever it was, right? The whole top end of the team would have looked stronger and better had we been able to bring on the other striker. Had we not started the game with Maeda through the middle, it would have been perfect, right? We don't dare, we don't strengthen. And so the manager's got to rotate between three players instead of four players. And that's that makes a difference, of course, as you know, right? Because you look at the bench and you look at the poverty of the bench and you say, well, he should be on the bench, he should be on the bench. We should have somebody else for that position. Bernardo's an unlucky one. We should have the extra midfielder, we don't, right? I look at Liam Scales and think, well, he's not bringing Liam Scales on to play in this game at any point. No, I thought it was. I thought the glaring opportunity missed was no signing the striker in January, who would have gave the manager better rotation options up front, and we would never have had to bring on Yang for that game. We could have brought on Jota instead. You know, bring on players who can genuinely freshen the team up at that end and not lose any of the quality. But Celtic, again, being Celtic, they always make, they always look for the path of least resistance and the path of least spending money. And so they, while you understand in some way, if we're only playing for the league and we're only playing for the Scottish Cup and we're already out of Europe and we don't have to worry about it, I still think there's an argument for strengthening in January anyway to better prepare for the summer. But you can see the argument if that's the case. But not when we've got two massive games like this in front of us. I just, it's inexcusable, man. It's inexcusable. And it, yeah. And it's not the first time they've failed the guy. And you get the horrible feeling that it won't be the last time. He sat there at the press conference on Friday and he spoke about his contract. And obviously he doesn't want to say anything either way, which has got to like, change the dynamic right now that we've got. But when he said, all he is wanting what's in the best interest of Celtic, I can't see how the best interest in, for Celtic is represented by any other than this guy signing a new deal. And if that is not the number one priority of the people at the top of your club, then I don't know what their priorities are. But I thought it was an absolutely brilliant performance. I thought that the guys on the pitch did themselves proud. I thought the manager did himself proud. Every single person at our club can walk with their heads held high after it, except for the people who let the manager down and could have made it an even better night. I guess they think they're pretty special because we did so well, but that was in spite of them and not because of them. Same story.
I mean, I would agree entirely with what you're saying there, James. But the other side of it is that we talked about this for long enough before the game. You know, I think in the build-up to the game, we all discussed what the shortfallings would be and how the shortfallings would come about.
Yeah.
And I think it was... You see, this is the thing. And I think this is the ironic thing, that we can see this. Every time this happens, every time we have a crap transfer window like we had in January, we can see straight off what the repercussions are going to be.
Yeah.
And we could clearly see in advance of the game against Bayern Munich what the repercussions were going to be. Well, look, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. We actually discussed that before the Aston Villa game. We actually said what the repercussions were going to be before the Aston Villa game. And now we've seen
clearly. The transfer window is still open and everybody, except maybe for us, expected that we'd spend some money and bring in some big name, or Chris Gardner, whatever his name would show up at Celtic on the last day.
Now we've seen, in terms of the way that Rodgers had to set his team up, in terms of the way that he had to make the substitutions to work around the fact that he was light in his squad. And, you know, you'd have to say in the run-up to January, we weren't light in our squad. That's the thing. We all discussed this in earlier podcasts about how deep our squad was. The squad is keen on the ground now. And we can see that. And I think, without jumping too far ahead, a perfect example of that was yesterday's game. You know, and what we we're not going to blame yesterday entirely on a European hangover. Okay, that's fair enough.
But what the absolute last thing I want to do is get anybody that alibi. The players don't deserve that alibi. The three guys that got hooked at half time, none of them have that excuse. None of them played the 90 minutes. None of them started the game, so they don't have any excuse for the way they played yesterday.
No, but what we would say is that the depth of the squad is an issue, and that the squad depth has been an issue since the January transfer window closed.
You know what? I have a little bit of sympathy with the alternative view, but somebody like Scales is perfectly capable of playing games against teams like Slovan Bratislava and that, and young boys or whatnot, right? And so is Greg Taylor, and these guys can rise to that level. But when you have to take that step up and play a team of that caliber, these guys shouldn't be anywhere near the squad, let alone on the park. They're just not good enough for that level. They're never going to be good enough for that level. It's why, look, I appreciate what Joe said about Taylor, and I've written some very nice things and very positive things about Taylor over the years, and Taylor has been the absolute good soldier, the best type of guy that you can have in your squad, who will just work hard, and if you sign somebody to replace him, he'll just work harder, and he'll fight the good fight, but he knows that the gig is up in the summer. He knows that there's nothing he can do. As long as Tierney's fit, he's not going to be the guy. And while I sympathise to a certain extent with that, and I sort of see the point about the money, you can only pay somebody what they're worth. This club has that policy right anyway. I can only pay somebody what they're worth. And Greg Taylor thinks that he's going to earn what Kieran Tierney earned at Celtic Park. somewhere else, he can go and find somebody who'll pay him that. I don't think anyone will, but he's good luck to him and go and find it. Go and try if you think you're worth it.
Yeah.
But in terms of what Celtic should be paying him, he isn't he worth the kind of wages that Schlupp is on, simply because Schlupp's a better player than he is, and that's it. And it's hard, and it's harsh, yeah, and it sounds callous and a bit cold, but that is the reality. That is football. It's a meritocracy. It's not charity.
Yeah, I mean, that was clearly evident on Tuesday evening. You could see the immediately, you could see the difference of, you know, and okay,
you see yesterday.
That in his commentary, you could see the difference when Schlupp was on, and his ability to handle Olise was, you know, and I look, we discussed that last week, and we discussed that the reasoning that Brendan would probably go with that reasoning, that he would play him because he knew Olise. And absolutely, we saw that on Tuesday evening. The containment that Schlupp did was brilliant, you know, and it's just a shame that didn't extend to the 94th minute and beyond. But look, that's the way the cookie crumbles, and we can't, you know, hindsight is a fool's version of foresight. We can't really say much about it now. But, you know, we can take an awful lot of heart from the performance. That's the biggest thing that we can take from it, you know. And I think we've all, in our blogs throughout the week, discussed the fact that the board would be absolute fools not to capitalise on this. Because they have to see, just like everybody else, that, you know, this is the cash cow. You know, the $3.5 million or $3.75 million that you're going to win for winning the treble in Scotland doesn't mean anything.
I've seen them take chances for Champions League qualification before, and they do it almost all the time. They've done it repeatedly. I mean, the one I write about a lot is Lennon. The year after Lennon got past Barcelona, and we finished, I think, second in the group. Did we finish top of the group? I can't remember, but we got to the knockout stages. His reward for that was that in every subsequent qualifying round, they weakened his squad by another player. I think the first one was it Vic or Gary Hooper won the tournament after the first qualifier. The second one went after the second qualifier. Kelvin Wilson went after the third qualifier, which is just preposterous. Absolutely disgusting. It's one of the most remarkable pieces of self-sabotage I think I've ever watched. I can't remember any other Celtic manager being sabotaged to that degree, that before they sold one of his best players. Absolutely disgusting, right?
Yeah, and probably.
And when Lennon went at the end of that season, I don't think a single person was surprised, because there's only so long you can work under those kind of restrictions and those kind of constraints. It's absolutely idiotic. But they dare not do that to this guy. They dare not do that to this guy this time, because you can see not just the progression, right? You can see not just how far we've came, right? But the reward this year has been so high, and the reward next year will be even higher. That to gamble with that kind of money is beyond gross negligence and starts to look like sabotage.
Yeah.
There really won't be any defending it at all. This is a gamble that they absolutely cannot afford to take, let alone anything else. It would just be the height of absolute lunacy. So,
you want anything further, Joe, or to add further, Joe?
James, you're in for a big shock through the...
I'm not in for a shock. I won't be shocked if we go into that game two or three players down from where we are right now. I won't be in the least bit shocked. So, I know it's within these people's capabilities to do exactly that. But I don't want anybody, FIFA and media or anywhere else, making grandiose claims at the end of it that this board knows what they're doing, and this board... You know, if by some chance we sell two or three players and we go through anyway, that proves these guys know what they're doing. It doesn't prove that they know what they're doing any more than, say, I was to mortgage the house, right, go to Vegas and stick the whole lot on red or black, right? No, if that bet comes up, nobody around here is going to thank me for that. They'll beat the living shit out of me the second I walk outside the casino for ever taking such a diabolically stupid risk in the first place. And that's how I will feel about it if that happens.
Right, okay.
There's nothing strategic about that. That's just, that's luck. That's nothing but pure dumb luck with the emphasis on the dumb.
Right, see over the coming months, Michael Nicholson will be doing a Kyogo. He'll be doing everything to sell Maeda and Nicholas Kuhn. And see if you get a bid for Jota. He would sell Jota as well. He's just in the door. That Michael Nicholson has learned his football business skills from his mentor, the chairman. So that's the direction that Celtic will be going in. It's a battle, and I'd suspect Brendan Rodgers probably doesn't expect to win the battle. It shouldn't even be a battle, but there's a great chance to get the same amount of Champions League money again next season. But rather than take that 10% or 20% risk, and if the worst comes to the worst, Celtic will have a damn good team for the Europa League. But the route that should be taken is he's already had about 3-4 months to find a striker. There should be a striker in before the start of pre-season training. There should be another midfielder to add competition. And the players that are getting earmarked to be sold, then their position should be getting strengthened now. But I suspect that there might be one player signed before pre-season training. We'll go into our pre-season training. First pre-season friendly. It would be a hell of a shock if there was signings of the quality of Engels, either trustee in place for pre-season training. But we'll wait. We'll see if we can get shocked. You never know. It might happen. I suspect it's 90% unlikely that Brendan Rodgers will have the quality and the strength and depth for pre-season so as that the minimal risk is taken in the playoffs, and the bigger risk is over the manager. It's pretty sad that the manager's got to use the prospect of getting into the Champions League next season as some sort of bargaining tool. But if Rodgers signed a contract tomorrow, then expect nothing. So the longer Rodgers holds back on signing a contract, he might be able to extract something from them. But deep down, Nicholson's loyalty is to his mentor, the chairman. We know how that guy operates. It won't be for the benefit of the team on the park. I am jolly.
No, you're, I strongly suspect that the bean counters will have their say on this. I strongly suspect that if there is a high, if there's a eight-figure offer for a player, I think that they will be pressuring the manager to let the guy go. I've absolutely no doubt that's the case. If we get a £25 million offer for Nicholas Kuhn or something, the pressure will be on the manager to take that, or he'll be told that his transfer budget will be restricted accordingly, and that's how it'll be. That's how it'll be. I can't remember. Brendan Rodgers has not spent a single penny of his transfer budget in either the first season or the second. Both of those transfer windows were paid for entirely by sales. Entirely by sales. And I don't really have a problem with that. As long as the money goes straight back into the team, or as long as sufficient money goes straight back into the team. But this weakening by a major player every year, it's not what's going to progress us. It's not going to progress us.
So, okay, guys. Well, really, you know, we don't...
That's
the
small
too long on this one. Yeah, we don't want to dwell too long on this one. Yeah, we need to press on and have a look at yesterday's game. So
do we anyway?
Obviously,
do we
yeah,
know what you're talking
about? Unfortunately, we have to. We went to Easter Road. I mean, on paper, you would have expected us to win that one. We would have expected it to have been tight. But from the very off in that game, I felt we were just off the pace completely in the first, especially in the first half, we were completely off the pace. They took us apart for the first goal. And an awful lot of the game just involved niggling, constant niggling, which, to be fair, the referee was just, I mean, he went with it the whole time. Every time one of their players hit the ground, it was a free kick. And the disruption caused was just off the scale, I thought, in the first half and the second half as well. The refereeing standard in the game was, it was brutal. It was cat. It was really, really bad. Just the decision making, the time of the decision making, even that second goal that Hibs got, fair enough. They weren't offside, but I mean, the whole offside rule, and we've discussed this, why can't they just put up the bloody flag, you know? And if the flag is down, you know, it's just, I think one of the biggest things that came out of yesterday was the fact that the game is very much now being refereed by the VAR. It's not being refereed by the referee on the pitch anymore in Scotland. The VAR is making the calls, and, you know, it's video assistant referee. Am I correct? That's what he is. Assistant being the operative word. But in Scotland, he is now the referee. He is now making the calls. He's now deciding what is and what's not going to be going to fly in again. And ultimately, that was very much in evidence when it came to our second goal. None of us can tell whether it was out completely over the line or not, because there is no camera angle that will actually tell that clearly. Which, again, when you look at the level of VAR that we have, or the version of VAR that we have, that it's that crap that we actually can't see that angle correctly. Or that we don't have the technology to actually decipher whether it was over the line or not. You know, so for me, yesterday was a game that displayed everything that is wrong with Scottish football and everything that is wrong with Scottish football refereeing. And Brendan Rodgers was right to ask the question, you know, I want clarity on where the decision came from. Now, we can talk about referees' allegiances and we can talk about all that. There's no point right now, okay? The simple fact is that we know Alan Muir's alleged allegiances, and the fact that the linesman, if we don't have a camera that can see what actually happened, and the linesman makes the call that that ball is not over the line, then there is no reason that that goal should not stand.
None at all.
None at all. And the VAR should not be interfering and saying and making that call to say that it wasn't a goal, because he can't even make that decision, because he can't even see. Unless he has a camera angle that the rest of us can't see, then if that's the case, Brendan Rodgers and Celtic need to see that. So, look, Joe, what's your opinion?
First of all, Stephen McLean and Alan Muir, their careers should have ended in 2015, the Inverness Cali Thistle game.
Absolutely.
Peter Lowell, Celtic sent a letter to the, went public with a letter to the SFA seeking clarification, and the reply has never been published. We don't know the answer. I suspect, and James suspects, that maybe reference was made to correspondence in July 2012. And Peter went back to hiding behind the cupboard. So those two guys shouldn't be anywhere near matches. There's been plenty of Alan Muir incidents. I did a piece this morning on Alan Muir, and somebody flagged up a penalty awarded against Jeremy Frimpong in a Scottish Cup tie against Partick Thistle. I think it was January 2020. It was just after the winter break. Patrick Klamala was on the bench. And he might have started that game, but folk have got lots of different Alan Muir memories. The Inverness Cali Thistle one's a standout one. Earlier than, but based on 1 3/4 seasons of using VAR, Willie Collum decided that Alan Muir was the best man in the world to become a full-time VAR official, alongside Andrew Dallas and Greg Aitken in the elite VAR department of the SFA.
Says it all.
In October this year, Maeda put the ball in the net against Motherwell. On VAR duty, Alan Muir spotted that he put the ball in the net using his arm. Alan Muir missed the fact that the reason he put it in the net with his arm was because he was pushed by Stephen O'Donnell. So one instant, Alan Muir was completely on top of things, but he missed out an incident a couple of seconds earlier. So it's getting to ridiculous levels when he's guessing at those decisions. So that's... But again, it's Celtic tolerate all this.
They should be called out. What I wrote this morning.
They should have called it out after the game at Motherwell. And if that happened, Alan Muir probably wouldn't have got the League Cup final in which he upset the other side for once. It was an incident that nobody in the park noticed, but afterwards there was quite a hoo-ha stirred up about it. But it's a very limited talent pool that Willie Collum fishes in. It's horrendous. The the display over 90 minutes with McLean was just typical. There was nothing massive in it, but it was all those annoying, niggling things. Yeah. Martin Boyle has got real gravity problems. He spends way too much of his time horizontal. We knew that in advance. We shouldn't accept it, but we know about it. And again, in AGM 2021, Ian Bankey says that he's got grave problems with Scottish referees. Well, they ain't get any better. And I think quickly going through AGMs, in 2022, Nicholson said, give it time, teething problems, let it settle down. 2023 was his gag about penalty Rangers. And 2024, he was asked specifically about John Beaton when Brendan Rodgers claimed he was incompetent. And he said, overall, things are getting better. We've got Willie Collins' 25-minute VAR review. There's transparency for you. Shut up and go away. So the fact that there's been no evidence, there's been no comment from Celtic, future VAR officials know that they can do the exact same as Alan Muir, make it up, whatever you fancy. If you've got the balls for it, and if you're in a full-time job, you can pull away with it. So until Celtic go tonto on this, and again, be better done in a match that they win, these things will continue. The team had a horrendous first half, but no matter how good or bad you play, the laws of the game should be applied the exact same. Because you're on a bad day doesn't mean you say, you had a bad day, that was a bad decision, so what? Or because you're 13 points clear, or if you're neck and neck, you still, the laws of the game should be applied the exact same. That didn't happen yesterday. The three Celtic players paid the price. They were substituted at half-time. Brendan Rodgers is getting criticism for his team selection, but Alan Muir sails on regardless. Is that the season Willie Collin claimed there's accountability? Not a bit of it. The same three guys will be... Oh, if Muir is now... Muir hasn't had any games involving Clement's team or Alec Ray's team or Barry Ferguson's team since the League Cup final. He's probably not going to get any more of their games this season. Hopefully... Willie Cobb will ease him out the picture for Celtic matches. So that means we're down to two full-time VAR officials. They'll be getting the televised matches. But every month there'll be something like this kicking up. And we're still waiting on Michael Nicholson's first comment. So I may be giving the Lowell family an easy time of it and switching to Nicholson. But he's a guy currently picking up the fat salary. Yeah. For doing very little. So that's nice. On Easter Road, over to you, James.
Well, first, I mean, there are obvious talking points to come for the game, but let's get to the nitty-gritty of the actual game itself first. We were woeful, especially in the first half. Woeful. Deservedly down at half-time. Three players get hooked at the break. Rodgers finally showing his claws and saying no more of this. And the three players, as I said at the start, don't even have the excuse of fatigue or anything else from Munich because they weren't in the starting 11. So just a completely disjointed, woeful, shocking display. And, you know, a lot of people want to give Hibs credit and whatnot, and I'm not going to do that either because I thought that there was another appallingly cynical performance for them. And I think I talked about one of their performances in a similar fashion earlier on in the season, where the players just threw themselves on the ground every time somebody went near them. And, of course, the officials were happy to just stop the game at every chance they got and then play right into their hands in that regard. But that doesn't excuse how bad we were. The second half, we picked it up when we were a bit better. The manager's changes definitely had an impact, and the players who came on definitely had an impact. Although I really seriously wanted to give Jota a good slap after his... tremendous bit of football and his failure to pass the ball. I mean, I understand that he wants to grab the glory, right? But it's a team game at the end of the day. And there are two players in a better position than him to put the ball in the net. And Nicholas Coon in particular would have tapped it in and probably won me a few quid out of the bargain since I had a bet on him. But you know, I don't... That whatever else happened in the game, we just were not good enough to win it at the end of the day. Although I don't believe we deserve to lose, as it turns out, because the second half performance was sufficiently good. Jota's passed up a really guilty chance to put us level, and then we've had the goal chopped off for what I can all describe as imaginary reasons, because that's what they were. I mean, the SFA, to release a statement talking about like a factual interpretation, there was nothing factual about that at all. It was a complete fiction. It was complete fiction. And for people to talk about like, oh, that's just VAR doing its job. No, VAR's job is to correct clear and obvious errors. And there was nothing clear or obvious about that at all. That was Alan Muir off his own back making shit up. That's what that was. And Joe, you're 100% right. This is the environment that we choose to operate in. Because it doesn't have to be this way when we choose to operate in it. It's like a guy emailing the online dating firm that he's joined and complaining that the only options he ever gets are mad birds for Paisley with weird accents and drug habits and 14 wains. And the email company and the online company emailing him back and saying, the website's literally called Mad Skulls for Edinburgh, Mad Skulls for Paisley.com. What else do you think you're going to get? This is the environment we chose. We walked into the casino and put our chips down on the table. We picked this. This is our fault. Scottish football is a mess because we allow it to be a mess. Brendan Rodgers was raging yesterday at the end of that game. He kept it contained and he kept it calm, but he was raging. And he wasn't just raging about decision, and he wasn't just raging about standards, the refereeing. He was raging about the standard of the whole thing at the SFA. And they're like, the version of VAR that we've got is like the cheapest knockoff version you could ever not want to see in your game. It doesn't make anything better. It adds to the controversy. And that, because it allows people like Muir to like subjectively interpret whatever they want. Of course they're going to subjectively interpret it whatever way they want. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. I actually thought until yesterday that we had some form of goal line technology, and we don't. And Rodgers was disgusted about that. And he's right to be disgusted about that. This would not fly just about any other league in Europe. It's absolutely shocking. But these are the standards we tolerate. We signed up for madskullsforpaisley.com and then wondered why the only options we ever get are mad bastards for Paisley. This is what we signed up for.
That was the first thing.
We continue to tolerate it, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it was the first thing to cross.
We're not the only club, by the way, that's pissed off with us. Dundee United have already quit in terms of their representation on Willie Collins' wee committee. And their reasons were that the technology's crap and it doesn't do what it's supposed to do because their version's too cheap. Exactly what Rogers said yesterday. They've also mentioned all the concerns that we've talked about on our own sites about the makeup of the VAR review panel. Like the Hearts decision last week, which everybody who watched it knew was a penalty, except for John Beaton and his VAR officials. They go up the park and score the second goal, right? But the VAR review committee confirms what we all know, right? But they did it by a 3-2 majority instead of unanimous decision. So other than the three officials, there are at least two other people in this country who either don't want to admit that it was a penalty or didn't see what the rest they saw, right? And so it's a farce. It's a complete farce. And Dundee United are right to walk away from it. And Dundee United, I think, wanted to start the debate about it. And not a single club, not one, lent their voice to the debate. And that includes us. And we should have been leading the debate, no fucking waiting on somebody else. I believe it, man.
Yeah. But like, I said the same thing at the game yesterday, you know, like, surely there's technology that can decipher whether this is over the line or not. And, you know, then I just started laughing and realized to myself, like, no, there isn't hope that there is. But the fact of the matter is, you made a point yesterday, James, where you said, you know, that the Scottish, you know, the SFA isn't fit for purpose and that Celtic should not be tolerating this. And I messaged you back and I said, well, then conversely, then the Celtic board isn't fit for purpose because they're not reacting to this. And they're not reacting to this. And I can't understand it. But then again, it's all about it goes back to all those things about the Celtic board that we just can't understand. We can't understand why they won't cash in on the Champions League. We can't understand why they will tolerate this crap when it comes to refereeing. I think it all boils down to the path of least resistance. These guys don't want to rattle any cages. They are happy to sit back, take their dividends every year, take their nice fat salaries, and do the least. I mean, it's like Joe said in a few episodes back, you know, none of what they do is rocket science. The jersey deals, all the things that make them look like these brilliant financiers who just are absolute, you know, geniuses of what they do with Celtic. But the simple fact of the matter is, to my mind, and I don't know if you guys have the same opinion, they do the bare minimum as a board. They do the bare minimum. Because if they were actually doing their...
very much like the SFA and the SPFL.
Yeah. If they were actually...
They like the idea of having authority and power and status, but they have no intention of ever using it today.
Yeah. Yeah. If they were actually doing their jobs, which they should be, you know, and there's one thing you have to give credit to the Ibrox side, is like that whenever crap like this happens, they're all over it. It's the clock. They're all over it. They will piss and moan about it all day long. But us?
As Joe's pointed out, it has effects and all. They know how to get the point across in a way that the SFA acts on it. I mean, although the last time they did, there was a bit of a sting in the tail because Collins ended up running refereeing instead of just being a referee, which I'm sure they're not happy about, but it's just one of the examples. Sometimes it goes against you, but... Listen, they know how to make a lot of noise and they know how to have an impact. It also helps, of course, when they've got a friendly media behind them, which amplifies every decision that goes against them.
Go on, Joe.
Colm takes his instructions from Hugh Dallas. So Colm has got no great say in things. He's fiddling about with things on the sidelines. But Celtic are quite happy with all this. It's levelling up. It makes things more competitive. They're happy to go along with it. I mean, I'm remembering what's a month or two into VAR, there was the camera malfunction at Motherwell. Jota scored an absolutely fantastic goal. They didn't have a decent camera on it, so the VAR official, it was either Willie Colm or David Dickinson. I think Colm was the referee and David Dickinson was on VAR, and he just decided that it was offside. And then, I think 2 days later, the SFA came up with an excuse on their website that the camera from the other 18-yard box was able to decipher. I think they even mentioned Hawkeye in it, and nothing remotely stands up. That game was on Motherwell TV, so they didn't have the Sky cameras, but that was allowed to pass. I mean, the SFA statement mentioned that Jota was offside when he received the ball. So that shows you the standards. And again, moan away about it, but at least us three, the source of all this is the Celtic board. It's not difficult to insist on a competent standard of VAR. And I mean, what was the recruitment process that produced Alan Muir as the best guy? They've also got a full-time VAR official. I think Martin Atkinson was brought in from England after John Moss made a hasty retreat. We've heard absolutely nothing from this guy, and he probably realises that Aitken, Dallas and Muir have got jobs for life. So there's really very little you can do as a VAR manager when those three guys are constantly getting the top matches. And we know the background of all three. Andrew Dallas was promoted miles beyond his capability, thanks to Daddy. Greg Aitken's got pictures of himself and his mate Coisty on his Facebook page. We've been discussing what Alan Muir's been up to for at least the last 10 years. None of those three guys are competent enough, objective enough.
Oh, they're just competent enough and they're just objective enough, I think.
They shouldn't be in their jobs. There's other folk that could be doing it, but Willie Colm... It was Willie Colm appointed Alan Muir, so Willie Colm was no new broom. And this time last year, Willie Colm was going through his Ibrox absence. They went after the game at Celtic Park when Colm was on VAR and didn't request a pitch side review for the Alistair Johnson handball after the ball was played through with Silla offside. They went mad about Colm. Colm never got any league matches. He got a Scottish Cup tie at home to Ayr United. And then as a farewell gift, he got the Glasgow Derby at Celtic Park. And then a couple of days later, it was announced that he was getting the top job replacing Crawford Allen. So it's all a stitch-up. The names might change, the faces might change, but the system's exactly the same. There's way too many guys from Lanarkshire folk from the East Coast don't get a look in. Unfortunately, Alan Muir's from Aberdeen, so he doesn't do as much favours, but I suspect Alan Muir would be quite at home in the Lanarkshire or Glasgow Refereeing Association. But we'll go round in circles with it until Celtic come out and start shouting about it, going public about it, then we'll be having this discussion at least once a month.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Joe, that my view and your view, my view and your view on the reasons why Celtic does nothing about this are slightly different, because I still cannot get my brain to subscribe to the idea that our club is trying to keep their club competitive. I don't believe that that is part of our agenda, because firstly, because I don't know how we could possibly do that, because they've shown an ability to shoot themselves in the foot, which is almost unbelievable. Almost unbelievable. And there's literally nothing we can do about that. Their club can collapse all on its own, and there's nothing that we can do to stop it. But as long as our club does nothing and says nothing and takes no action and promotes no agenda to reform this and change it, then your idea for why is going to sound a lot better than mine to a lot of our fans. And a lot of our fans are going to come to your conclusion and not mine. And mine is simple enough. I think these people are both just incompetent and lazy. I think I think they're comfortable in their seats and they're comfortable in their roles, and they just don't want to do anything that makes a life even 5% more difficult. And even I don't think that they're good strategists, and I don't think they're good team players and coalition builders. I just think they're terrible at what they do.
Yeah.
And it amounts to the same thing anyway. It amounts to inaction. It amounts to nothing getting done.
Yeah, I made a point during the week there. I wrote an article where I said that the Celtic board decides their MO is it's deciphered by the level of challenge that they're going to get from the next best team. And I went back to the years where the Ibrox side were not in the top flight, you know, when after they got liquidated and they, you know, the new team started in the lowest division. And I made the point of the fact that the board built their way of operating around the level of challenge that they got from Motherwell to start with, because Motherwell finished second in the first two seasons that the Ibrox side weren't in the top flight. And then Aberdeen pushed us after that, and they came within 8 points of us, and they built their challenge. The Aberdeen, up until 2018, produced more of a challenge than the Ibrox side did, even when the Ibrox side came back.
Yep, that's
but
right.
The whole point that I was making was that the board only decided that they would, you know, they would work around the challenge that they faced. And the challenge that they faced during the absence of the Ibrox side was lower, you know, there was less crowds at the games. They closed the top tier of the stadium. Everything is built around how close the next contender gets. And they very much build it around how close the Ibrox side is getting to us. And I said that if this whole US takeover is factual, which we'll discuss soon enough, I don't believe it is, and you guys don't believe it is. To the extent that it's being made out to be, I'm saying. But the point I'm making is that it's a good thing, because it will push them to maybe stay those couple of steps ahead, because that's all they're willing to do. They will only ever be willing to stay a couple of steps ahead of the nearest challenger. Except for obviously what happened in the 2020-21 season, you know, and that was literally where we just fell flat on our face because of complacency. And we thought that we couldn't be challenged, and we thought that Neil Lennon was the man for the job, and we all know how that ended. So I'm not going into that. That's a story for another day. But the point I'm making is the board will only ever react to the challenge that is coming towards them from the second best team. And I think we all recognize that fact.
Agreed.
You know, so anyway, we could dwell on that all night. I think just to round up what we were talking about and going back to the game yesterday, as we expected, you know, after something interesting would happen at Ibrox, and it did. And needless to say, they didn't let us down, and they were the gift that keeps on giving, and they lost 2-0 at home, which ultimately it looks like now, as the news is filtering through this evening, that Clement has lost his job as a result of what happened yesterday. And we did say that a couple of weeks ago after the Queen's Park result, that if results kept on being chronic and really bad, and yesterday's, to be fair, was brutal, it was inevitable that it was going to happen. So, I mean, it's funny, Joe, but they went out and they did us a massive favour in the aftermath of they lost to Hibernian, didn't they?
They lost to St. Nan.
Oh, sorry. No, I said they went out and did us a favour after we lost to Hibernian.
Right.
So,
yeah, it was good fun yesterday. I wasn't intending watching it, but I know, well, as soon as our game finished, I switched over to TNT to get the Man United and Everton, which I wasn't interested in. But towards halftime, I switched on, so it was nothing each. So through the wonders of technology, I had their game on in the second half. But I switched over when Sky Sports News said that Igamani had been sent off. But by the time I got over, that
had been brought back on.
Kevin Clancy's bottle crashed. He remembered where he was and what his job was. And he remembered what his lucrative income stream should be for the next couple of years. They were absolutely dire. St. Nan had more shots in goal, and afterwards Clermont barely put up any defence. It was almost an invitation. Come on, lads, give us my payoff. I'm done with this. You're done with it. Everybody's done with it. So it appears that he's getting his payoff tonight. So thanks, Phil. You were great. It's been 51 great weeks for Clermont. At the start of March last year, unexpectedly, they lost to Motherwell. He went bonkers. They lost 2-1 to Motherwell, but he says they should have won 6-1. So as well as scoring about 5 extra goals, one of the Motherwell goals shouldn't have counted. And it's been peak banter years since then. He's been off his nut. So that was March. April was the moral victory against Celtic. May, they lost at Celtic Park. We won the league. We won the cup. And August was Dynamo Kiev. September was 3-0 at Celtic Park, etc., etc. So thanks, Phil. It's been great. We're going to miss you greatly. The first couple of months, his media conferences were almost as dull as Van Bronckhorst. But then he turned into peak Pedro Caixinha. It's been fantastic. So big boots to fill, but I'm sure they'll come up with somebody worthy of it. And after all, Warburton English experiment, Pedro half bonkers from Central America, Steven Gerrard, dull Englishman, Van Bronckhorst, dull Dutchman, Mickey Beale, Cockney Chancellor, and then onto a sophisticated form guy. Surely it's time for a real Rangers man. Somebody died in the wool. Whether it's John Brown, Derek McInnes, Alec May, Barry Ferguson, Neil McCann, Bob Malcolm, Kevin Thompson, whoever it is, give us a real Rangers man, somebody that understands the club, somebody that understands the tradition, somebody that will give us all those cliches about how
everything's
geared around success. The fans are used to success. Anything less is massive failure. And in the corner, Tav's writing his programme notes for another manager. So thanks, Phil. I'll put the takeover nonsense, the fake over, into the shade for a couple of days. But we've got two good stories running, plenty of content, plenty of clicks. So I'm sure James has got a few words to say about it all.
Well, just in terms of the game yesterday, for him to come out at the end of it and say that he was really surprised is about as stupid as anything that he has said for the minute he walked in the door. Because that was exactly the last thing that their fans wanted to hear, because they were not in the least surprised, and neither were we. The only person, I think, in the whole country who was surprised was him. For him to then offer up the usual plethora of excuses was even worse. He said at one point that the players were scared. And as I joked in the article, maybe one of them saw Paris Hilton, or thought they saw Paris Hilton in the stand, and the fear leaped into the rest of the team, and boom, there's a bad result. But when your excuses are getting that bizarre and out there, and you've not got any defenders left in the stands, the fan media are turning up to press conferences just to tell you to get the fuck, then you're all out of options, really, and you can't afford a result like that. I said that he wouldn't be taking the... I said months ago that he would never show up at Celtic Park for the derby. I mean, I said it right after Ibrox. The one consolation that we can take for this is that, you know, whether Rodgers figures out his tactical master plan or not, it's irrelevant, since Rodgers will never face him in the dugout again. That was a Stonewall certainty.
James, there's a bit of interference in your mic there. I'd say push back a bit from it.
He might not be the worst manager in the recent history over there, but he's up there with the best of them or the worst of them, if you like. Some of his statements were peak Cassinia. Some of his results were peak Michael Beale. I thought towards the end, his personality was even more difficult to engage with than Van Bronckhorst, who I once described as being like interviewing a mop, just pure, flat, monotone, monosyllabic answers. I don't know how the media got through most of those press conferences, but had started getting a wee bit like that as well. So there was a wee bit of like, all the worst Ibrox managers of recent years, all rolled up and packaged in one guy, which was quite amazing. And it's not really that long ago since a lot of the media who spent the last month or two shouting about sacking him were bended into Kiss the Toga. I mean, I know he even gets mentioned very seldom on here because I don't like giving that old fossilised relic who should have been put out of his misery years ago. But he's one of the worst examples because he flipped his script about four times in a month. You know, at the start of it, he was the greatest manager in Scotland and he was going to see Brendan Rodgers off and, you know, all he needed was a bit of luck and a break. And then the next week it was, oh, we can't keep on doing this because it's just embarrassing for the club. And then after a couple of positive results, it was like, oh, he's getting his act together. And again, this is a man showing his quality and his class. And then it was like, oh, sack him. Sack him. Sack him. Results are unacceptable and embarrassing. I mean, give us a break, man. Give us a break. Some is maintained for a very long time that he'll get off to a good start. Aye. But during that so-called good start and the build-up of momentum, we beat them. And then the momentum continued. It was like they skipped to a Ruhr game. But the momentum continued until the Motherwell result. And then it was like, oh, this has knocked them off course slightly, but we'll get him back on course. And as I said at the time, the worst thing that happened to that guy, the worst possible thing that could have happened to him, did happen to him. We had the mid-season slump. They caught up. They moved ahead by 2 points. And at that stage, any benefit of the doubt he was going to get was gone. Because if he'd have come out at the end of last season, right, and it had just been a shit show, he could have said, well, you know, at the end of the day, Michael Beale left us in a mess and I'm still trying to clean it up and whatnot, right? But he gets them out in front and all of a sudden the story changes. The narrative shifts for being the guy who couldn't quite mount the comeback to the guy who almost mounted the comeback. And suddenly you're the guy in the driving seat. And there's only two ways for the story to go. You either get out of the line, which meant that we had to go through an even bigger slump, or Celtic wins the title and you're the guy who blew it. And that was always going to be the outcome. He was always going to be the guy who blew it. Even though he came in and inherited a total disaster, the second he got in front, he was the guy who fucked up. It was his fault that they never won the league. It was actually our fault that he never won the league because we were just too damn good in that closing stage. But I knew their fans would never see it that way. It was, this guy's blew this. And right away out of the gate, you need a perfect start to the following season, which he did not have. And Kiev is what put the noose on his neck. And it was a matter of time after that. And you were just waiting for somebody to give him the shove. They're the most intolerant fan base in the world. And he never lived up to the standards anyway, right? He was never going to live up to the standards. He's not that good a coach. His record prior to getting here was a bit hit and miss and a bit of a mess. His time at Monaco should have had the alarm bells ringing loudly and the media was willing to overlook that, and it was like, every manager goes through a spell where they have, like, one disaster. This is now two disasters. And I'm afraid Ibrox is usually the one that effectively ends your career. So, Phil, it was nice knowing you and all that, but bye-bye.
Yeah, so, I'd be inclined to agree. James, there seems to be a bit of interference in your mic there. I don't know what's happening, but, we'll miss him. He's been entertaining. He's been very entertaining. There's no two ways about it. And I think yesterday, just it was pure rabbit in the headlights. His reaction. To the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree with what some of the websites said today, that he looked like a guy who knew the gig was up.
Oh yeah, like, he had
resigned, shoulders down, head down. Yeah,
when the guy's questioning him, or just saying like, come on, come on, Phil, just admit it's over, you know, because that's pretty much what they were saying. But yeah, look, we have to see how it pans out, because he's not officially sacked yet. Michael Gannon is saying in the record
there's apparently some talks going on about the payoff. Yeah, stay and get every penny. Oh, take him for every bean, every red cent. You deserve it, man. You deserve it.
We'll see what happens.
He does deserve it. He hit all his KPIs. He hit all his targets. Last stages of the League Cup. Right, Scottish Cup, okay, fair enough. You can possibly hold that against him. Second place in the league, that was the target. That's the best he could hope for. That's what he achieved. Nobody's taking that away from him. Last stages in the Europa League. Brilliant. Perfect. So as far as he's concerned, he's hit his targets. He's brought the wage bill down and still hit his targets. So he's entitled to every bean he gets. You hang in there and get it all, Phil. Don't settle for a penny. Of course.
Anyway,
don't sign the NDA either, because we want to hear the full story one day.
We won't dwell in it too long for tonight. We'll see what it develops or what the end result is anyway. But finally, our final segment of the show, we're going to have to talk about the great Ibrox fakeover. So, Joe, your honest opinion, what's actually happening?
I'll let James go first. I'll follow up.
Okay.
Well, I'm the one out of the three who, I think, the only one out of the three who actually believes that this or some version of this will actually happen. But I also don't think it will be anywhere remotely close to the hysterical guff that we've been reading in the media for the last 4 days, because almost every single word of that has been fantasy land nonsense. And I mean, absolute moon howling, mind bending, off the charts, nuts. I mean, I often accuse our media it taking trips out of Glasgow and vanishing through the wardrobe to Narnia. But it's like, this is the most bonkers I've ever seen. This genuinely is. Some of the coverage is the most nuts I have ever witnessed in a whole decade doing this. I mean, the Paris Hilton story the other day was just a serious news outlet actually published that story, that Paris Hilton and Will Ferrell could soon be on the Rangers border. You know, you read that and you think to yourself, does he believe what he's writing? Does he think anybody in his audience will believe what he's writing? And you go out to the mad fan forums out there, and they do believe it, and it's like, oh, this is really exciting. Think of all the celebrities we'll have coming to Ibrox. Fucking mad bastards. And nothing about it, nothing about what the media is writing makes any sense. Nothing about it makes the slightest bit of sense. I pulled Graham McGarry's article in the Herald apart this morning, right? That's going up run about the same time as this podcast goes up, I think, anyway. Aye. And it was just, I mean, he tried to keep it real, right, and he tried to write like a more balanced version of what the rest of the media wrote, but it sounds like a guy who, it sounds like a machine that's been fed a press release and all he's done is regurgitated all the main points of it, right? And nearly everything he said was like generic, meaningless business buzzword bullshit. I mean, nearly every bit of it. I mean, he talked about the 49ers and their tremendous record of success. And you're like, well, they did have a tremendous record of success until the York family bought them, and they haven't won anything since. So the tremendous record of success, I'm not quite seeing it. The success they've had at Leeds, well, they've been on the board at Leeds for 7 years, right? And there have been no spectacular, stunning innovations at Leeds in the 7 year period. So, okay, give them the benefit of the doubt. For the first 3 years, I think they were minority shareholders. They had like 17%. Then they upped it to 44%. And that was 4 years ago. So where are the innovations in the 2 years between them having 44% and buying the whole club outright? Well, they weren't anywhere. There weren't any spectacular, stunning, brand new innovations that they brought in. So I have to wonder what a shareholder with 44% who had all these innovative ideas, was waiting for before it told the rest of the board what these ideas were and started to implement them. But nothing. And they've owned the club outright for 2 years. And where are the innovations? Where are the spectacular, stunning changes? I cannot believe that it took our websites to point out that while the newspapers are running wild with mad stories about how Graham Souness's £50 million plan, which wasn't a plan at all, it was just a bunch of mumble-jumble junk coming out of that clown's mouth, in no way represented a plan, is coming to fruition, right? They're getting £50 million bounty spent on players, right? Okay. Is that realistic? How much have they spent at Leeds? Amazingly, it took our sites, again, to be the ones who pointed out that on £150 million transfer income, they spent 30 on the team this year to get to the English Premier League. A move which, if it succeeds, will quadruple the value of the club. £30 million from £150 million they brought in. That is £10 million less than the Celtic board we slag every single day for not doing enough. £10 million less. So they're going to go into Ibrox and spend on that club with no hope of ever seeing a return. More money than they're spending on Leeds. When if they get that right, the value of the club itself will increase by 400%. It's fantasy. It's crazy. It makes no sense. There is no universe in which this adds up. But they believe it. These people will believe in it. These people will believe in it. I wrote an article about 2012. I wrote a series of articles this week about 2012. And the last one was about how every single bad thing that's befallen this club is the fault of their fans. They did this with Craig White, exactly the same. They did it with Charles Green, exactly the same. They had a billionaire who owned an English football club who took over before or wanted to take over before. And every single thing that they said about that deal when it was announced, you could just switch his name with a guy from Leeds, mix up the dates, and you would never be able to tell which article was then and which article is now, because it's all identical. Oh, he wants Champions League exposure. Why does he want Champions League exposure? If he gets his team to the English Premier League, he's got all the global football and exposure he could ever get. If he gets Leeds to the Champions League, that's worth 10 times more than what just having Leeds in the EPL will have them, right? So there's his exposure right there. Oh, and in Ashley's case, it was he wants us for our merchandising, right? The guy who owned a sportswear conglomerate needed their club for his merchandising arm. I mean, it's just bonkers. Makes no sense at all. These guys are going to spend all this money on our club. They're going to pour millions into Ibrox. Money which Ashley didn't spend on Newcastle and this guy isn't spent on Leeds. I mean, and as if that wasn't enough. Once he was gone, who was next? Oh, only the guy with 80 tax convictions in South Africa, the glib and shameless liar. And they believed every word that came out of his mouth. And now, on the back of what to me looks like a well-organized public relations campaign, they're ready to roll out the red carpet for people they don't know, for a business plan they've never seen, with a buyout whose details they have no idea about whatsoever. Although if it's an American deal, it's most likely it'd be a leverage buyout, which is they borrow the money, they buy the club with the borrowed money, and they transfer the debt to the club itself. You tell me how that makes their position and their situation even one bit better. It doesn't. It will make it worse. You're going to lose your club. That's as bluntly as I can put it, guys. This is a Trojan horse. If I were you, I'd burn it on the beach. I would not let it anywhere near the inside of the city. You're insane if you go for this. You're insane. But they're rolling out the red carpet. These people deserve everything they get. Everything they get. And at every single stage, we were the only people telling them, don't do this. Craig White's a crook. Don't listen to him. Charles Green's a charlatan. Do listen to him because he's talking about big Yorkshire hands that are going to steal the money. Whose money do you think that is? It's your money. No, they didn't want to hear that. They didn't want to hear that Ashley wasn't going to turn their club into a super club if he had no interest in doing it with his local club that he owned, that was a Premier League club. They didn't want to say that. King came in. What are you trusting a glib and shameless tax cheat for? This guy's a criminal. This guy's not got a scruple on his body. And you're going to trust him? Why? Are you mad? This will lead to nothing but trouble. Of course, they never listened to that. So, of course, I'm not going to listen to this. You guys are mad. You guys are insane. Burn it on the beach. Do not wheel it into the city. This is a Trojan horse. You guys are mental. We're the last people that got to listen.
That's your real
best friends their club ever had, and they don't even know it.
James, the media are doing a fantastic job. They're making all the readers very, very happy. They've had months and months and months of misery. They watched the Queen's Park game. They saw Celtic play Bayern Munich twice. And Wednesday, Keith Jackson popped up. Christmas Eve, gifts all round. It was fantastic. And despite the source of the story being Keith Jackson, and he could barely keep a straight face, and I will recommend watching the Daily Record Hotline podcast. Jackson's on that 4 or 5 times a week. He's the star of the show. And it's going to be pretty difficult for him to get away from this story that he broke. But he was laughing away.
How can you believe him patting himself on the back about that? Oh, this is the biggest story this newspaper's broken in years. You never broke a story, guys. Let's be honest here. You never broke a story. Somebody sent you a PR pack full of information about these guys and said, this is what I want you to write. That's not journalism, pal. That's not breaking a story. You're stenographers. You're working for somebody's PR firm. That's all you're doing. And how do we know that? Because that's how Craig White got you on the hook. His people sent you a PR release. You regurgitated every single word of it and claimed it was a scoop. It's not journalism. Stop kidding yourself on.
It's journalism 2025. Their job is to make people happy, to keep the turn into their websites, buying their papers, and that keeps advertisers happy. So Keith Jackson was handing out the gifts on Wednesday. He could barely keep a straight face. He touched on previous Rangers takeovers. And it was fantastic viewing. His words are magical. I mean, it was a transformational move, multi-million pound investment, and a summer spending splurge. Fantastic, Keith. So the fact that Keith is the source of this, if that's not the biggest red flag of all, I don't know what is. But it's good news for Bears all round. They've had a couple of great days of it. They've been buying American flags. All their podcasters are all doing little American themes. It's brilliant. So initially we were told San Francisco 49ers, San Francisco 49ers.
Wait till they find out that San Francisco hates Trump. We have vengeance. Not going to them either. If they're hoping to sell a lot of shirts, they're not going to sell them there.
So it was San Francisco 49ers with a wee hint of Leeds United. And then the next day it was Leeds United. The guy even went to a match at Manchester United. So it's all Leeds, but absolutely no chance of going to become Leeds feeder club. This isn't agreeing with me tonight. And then by day three, they introduced this guy, Andrew Kavanagh. So that's it. It's been watered down from San Francisco 49ers to Leeds United to a guy that sold a medical insurance company. And Dave King couldn't contain himself, so he should have really sat quietly in the background. But Dave King being Dave King, 2 days into the story, he's getting in touch with the Rangers Review and The Sun, and he's telling you this, that, the next thing. But what the telltale line was, most of the things that have been written about this are miles off target. So we've got to the heart of the matter. Dave King has finally found someone else interested in his shares. He's possibly found some of his fellow shareholders. John Bennett might be interested in getting rid of his shares, but you'll need to cut a deal with 4 different guys.
That's the question, mate. Right, you know the numbers as well as I do, right, and what the shareholdings are there. Do you see any way that they get 51%?
No, that's why it's not happening. So Dave King might be able to get rid of his shares. John Bennett might sell out, but because Dave King's at the heart of this, I think there's virtually no chance of Douglas Park selling up. The Bears have all been whipped up into a frenzy.
Well, the move against Douglas Park is obvious, right? The move against Douglas Park is obvious, and the pressure that will be put on him is fairly standard in political moves like this, is where you basically tell Douglas Park, you're the holdout, pal. You're the guy people will blame if this collapses. So if you think you can handle that kind of pressure, then by all means, you dig in, buddy. Otherwise, get your shares sold to these guys and take what you can get and fuck off. And I suspect that that will be enough for some of them. And I suspect that that kind of pressure's more than they want to deal with. I can see them getting a percentage that allows them to be the controlling interest on the board. whether that's 51% or whatever, right? I don't see any evidence that this will be of any benefit to them at all. It might professionalize them a little bit. It might give them access to Leeds reserve and youth players, whatever it is. But the whole leveraged buyout thing would scare the living daylights out of me if this was Celtic. I wouldn't want these people near Celtic. And when you look at their track record, it's not very impressive. When you look at how they've handled the Leeds situation, it's not very good. When you look at how the Yorks have actually handled the 49ers themselves, it's terrible. They don't have any record as winners or innovators. That, I mean, as you'll see when you see the McGarry interview, McGarry included an entire section where the Leeds chairman talked about why they brought Red Bull onto the board, right? And it's all about, oh, we get access to good scouting, we get access to good analytics, we get access to good, like, training regimens and all that. And I read that and I thought, well, you guys have been on the board for 7 years. What was the point? What's the point in you if Red Bull could have done all this instead? Well, what did you bring to the table? You personally didn't bring Red Bull to the table. Right, Leeds could have had Red Bull interested in on board at any point. So if they're bringing all this professionalism, what exactly do you guys bring? What's the point in you, except that you've loaded the club with $200 million in debt just to get your hands on it? I mean, it's barmy. The whole thing is barmy. I genuinely don't... If it was your club, I would not want them near it. And I'm not joking. I know there's a lot of mad, deluded Ibrox fans out there who think that we are scared, that we're worried, that we're nervous about this. I just don't get it. I don't see it. I don't see what it is that they see. There's an analogy that I like about two people having a conversation through a window, right? One of them's outside the house, one of them's inside the house. And the guy inside the house is looking at the guy outside. And the guy outside is acting like a maniac. He's running about, he's screaming, he's waving his hands, he's banging in the glass. They can't hear each other, so they don't know what each other's saying. And the guy in the house is standing there looking at a nutter. And he's trying to say to the guy, what's the matter with you? But the guy can't hear him. Well, the guy outside the window is looking at a guy standing in a burning building, and he's trying to tell him to get out. And he's looking through the glass at a nutter. And that's how I see them. They're out there shouting, screaming, and shrieking, right? And it may well be that they're telling me that we're in a burning house, right? But at the end of the day, there's like a failure to communicate here, right? The thing is, they're the guys who are in the burning house. And we're the ones trying to tell them that it's a burning house. But we shouldn't need to do that, because you should be able to smell the smoke. You should be choking on the goddamn smoke. You should feel the heat on the flare above you that's about to come down on top of you. And I cannot understand how their perspective and our perspective in this are so entirely different. They literally should be running for the door, and they're not. They should be screaming, and they're not. And I just see people who are behaving with a great deal of euphoria in a situation where I would be scared out of my wits. Scared out of my wits. And they don't have any say in this either. You know what I mean? All this is getting done behind their back. The main fan organization, the shareholder organization, hasn't even opened its mouth. And they're totally excluded for this. They're on their side. They're like Ukraine, sitting watching while two other countries carve up the future of their country. And they're like, where are we here? How come we're not at the meeting? How come we're not allowed in the room? And in the meantime, one set of Charlatans is selling it to another set of Charlatans. It's mad. It's mad.
The reality is,
I don't understand why their perspective and ours is so different here. I don't understand why they don't know they're in a burning bill.
James, it's the crazy. Reality is that to the Ibrox fan base right now, right? They're at rock bottom. They're at absolute rock bottom when you consider what's happened in the last
desperation makes people
desperation. They're clinging onto anything that comes their way. They're literally clinging onto anything that comes their way. And this to them is a dream come true. This is what we've always looked to a degree, taking the piss out of them about over the years, where they've been waiting for that sugar daddy to come. And they firmly believe that this is their sugar daddy that's coming in, that's riding in with the stars and stripes billowing out behind them.
Based on Keith Jackson's PR? Yeah, but Keith Jackson? The guy who sold them
Keith Jackson. They believe Keith Jackson about the billionaire wealth off the radar. Like if they believe that, they believe anything. You know, that's the reality. They will believe anything. They only see what they want to see. They never see what they don't want to see.
Have you seen the movie Nuremberg with Alec Baldwin and what do you call him? Brian Cox. Brian Cox plays Hermann Göring. It's about the Nuremberg trial. And it's about the prosecution of the war criminals. And one of the things that the Americans did during it, the Americans and Russians and the Brits who were running it, is they hired a psychologist to go and talk to all the defendants, try and find out like who was savable, who was salvageable, and who was not. And one of the guys who got found guilty, but his life got spared, was Albert Speer. And it's a bit where the psychologist talked to him and says, look, you're an intelligent man. How could you have fallen for this? How could a guy like you have been seduced by empty platitudes? And Speer says, that's all Nazi Germany was empty platitudes. And it's easy for somebody like me to be seduced by that, because when it's vague and when it's unformed, you hear in it what you want to hear. And your hopes and your dreams and your aspirations and your ambitions, you project onto this, and so it becomes whatever you want it to be. Right? And basic human psychology, and dead easy to understand, right? And that's all they're doing here. And that's all Graham McGarry's article was today. That's all it was today. It was a bunch of meaningless bluff and blah, blah, blah. And their imaginations will do the rest. And that is exactly why these organizations send these press releases out there in the first place. They pick their wee cadre of journalists who are just gullible enough that will sell it the way they want to sell it. And they just let imaginations run wild. And that's all we've seen for the last 4 days.
Yep.
Is people's imaginations going mental and coming up with the most barmy scenarios they can come up with. It really is embarrassing to watch. It's embarrassing to watch. And it insults your intelligence as people who are literally standing on the outside and looking in and seeing utter insanity.
Yeah. I said it's like you're going back there to Nuremberg, and I used the analogy today in my article about the fact that, you know, Adolf Hitler said, if you tell the same lie enough times over and over again, people will believe it to be true. And that's exactly what the media has done. They're just regurgitating the same lie over and over again, and now the Ibrox fans all believe that it's true. Yeah. So look,
how many times have they got all the same freaking lie? How many times can they fall for the same thing?
Okay. We've gone way, way over time. So final segment. Aberdeen Tuesday night. Joe, what's gonna happen?
We'll get back on the wagon. We'll win 2 or 3 nothing. There's nothing to worry about Aberdeen. They've won 2 games in a row after winning 14 SPFL matches without a win. So nothing to worry about there. It's all down to Celtic. So I would expect Brendan Rodgers to sort things out. It's again, we're playing a Tuesday, so it's a hell of a schedule. We've had Saturday, Tuesday. But get through that. And St. Mirren, I think it's St. Mirren on next weekend away. That'll be tricky.
That's a tough one, yeah.
I hadn't really looked that far ahead, but that'll be a tough match. But a whole match with Aberdeen should be fairly routine. So I suspect a 2 or 3 nothing home win.
Yeah. I suspect the same. Because this team very rarely has 2 really bad games in a row for a start. We're very resilient. We'll shake ourselves off, and in front of the home crowd, I think it will be a fairly routine day at the office. Am I right in saying that we win that game and we are down to 10 games left? Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. And start planning the party. Yep. That's good. That's excellent.
Yeah. I'd be inclined to agree with both of you guys on that. I think if we go back to last season or last week's title, just another Saturday, I think it'll be just another Tuesday. You know, we'll probably win 2 or 3 nil. It'll be fairly run of the mill. I don't see Aberdeen presenting anywhere near the same challenge they did to us last October. They were a completely different proposition then. They've fallen off the rails completely. Okay, they might be somewhat back on the rails now after winning 2 games in a row, but they're nowhere near, or they won't represent anywhere near the threat they did last October. So, yeah, look, guys, it's been a long one. It's been interesting, but there was a fairly packed agenda.
They gave us a lot of work with this week, didn't they?
They did. They gave us a lot to work with. It could have gone on longer. But what I would say is, you know, again, folks, if you enjoy what we're talking about, please like and subscribe. You know, we're getting there. We're getting closer to that 1,000. We're about 880 or close to 880 now, so we're not far off the 1,000. So keep just liking and subscribing and hitting the bell, and we'll see how things will go after this one. It's been good, guys. Any final points? Are we all happy to wrap it up with that? Excellent. So, look, we'll all talk again next week.
Oh, we'll miss you.
We'll have plenty of more interesting things to talk about then. But until then, it's been good, guys. Talk to you then. Take it easy.